I'm not saying it's sink or swim. Yeah, but I've already jumped in. 'Cause tonight's not the night to play it safe or take it easy.
Hello, world. This is CS50 Live, and this is our season finale. But boy, do we have a good episode for you today. In particular, the latest in image stabilization, RoboSoccer, and ultimately a look back at CS50 Live itself. Now, you may recall that desk lamps have been a bit of a thing this year. In fact, this was kind of a spontaneous introduction to CS50's Week Zero this past fall 2013. Just a day or so before the very first lecture this past fall, I decided it would be kind of fun to be able to visualize binary, zeros and ones. And so I headed to CS50's favorite store, Target, and picked up these desk lamps here. Now, at the end of the lecture, I found that I didn't really need these lamps for another year, and even if I did, it would kind of be an old bit by 2014, so I offered them up to students in the audience. Now, since then, of course, we've been receiving quite a few emails, Facebook posts, and tweets requesting these same CS50 desk lamps to be sent nationally and internationally. And so we did. And we got back this very nice note from CS50's Luigi Morelli in Rome, Italy, who wrote us this. And here I am, thanks to CS50 staff. Hey, look at those four books behind me. In fact, if you do look up there on the top shelf, you will see four books. And if we enhance, you'll see that it's a canonical set of computer science books by a very renowned computer scientist known as Donald Knuth, who wrote The Art of Programming. So if you yourself are looking to build out your own collection of computer science canon, go ahead and take a look at The Art of Programming. Now, meanwhile, if we take a look at videos that some of your classmates have submitted, we will see the first one from Rianne, from India.
Hi, I'm Ryan Mathurishi from India, and I'm taking CS50 online on edX. And the reason I want a lamp is basically because I don't have a lamp at all, and I really need one as I'm doing late nights for PSATs and all this stuff, and I don't have any desk lamp or anything like that. So it would be really great if you guys could send me one. I'm Ryan Ahmed, and this is CS50.
Now, your next classmate, Mauricio, you may recall from a previous video, but this time Mauricio decided to take it up a notch and actually deliver his own lecture for Week Zero.
So, this is CS50. My name is Mauricio Rada, and 73% of you have no prior experience in computer science, contrary to what you might think. So today we thought we would chip away at that lack of familiarity, but also give you a sense of, for those of you with more comfort, which directions you can go this semester. So let's start with this. I have this little desk lamp here, so... Oh, we haven't any desk lamp here. We can't go on. So, if we haven't any desk lamp here...
This is... not CS50.
At the next CS50...
And lastly is Sid, also from India, who actually decided to create for us his own song.
Hi, I'm Sid, and I'm from India. I want a desk lamp because... how about I put it this way? Kind of funny how life can change. Want to take CS50 in a matter of days. So I'm making this video to show you guys why I deserve a brand new desk lamp. So it goes like this. I get yelled at every night for not switching off the light.
Switch off the light, man!
Whether I'm writing lyrics or coding some bricks.
Dude, I'm switching off the lights.
5 minutes. Just 5 minutes. One love for CS50, one love for the desk lamps, one love. If I don't get one, I won't survive, so please give me a desk lamp. Darkness makes me wet my pants, please give me a desk lamp. Desk lamp is all I need. I hope you like it.
Now, lest I be shamed on the internet, it's CS50 that's an introduction to the intellectual enterprises of computer science and the art of programming. But Professor Donald Knuth's books, if you would like to Google and find them yourself, are the art of computer programming. Now, you may recall that CS50 recently participated in this, a 48-hour film project wherein CS50 had just 48 hours to create a short film with a few required elements. Now, one of the scenes from that film was this one here, wherein Davin was desperately running along the Charles River near Harvard trying to just say hello. Now, what you might not have realized is that running in front of these two were actually three guys. In fact, pictured here is some of CS50's team, and if we zoom in, you'll see Ian holding the camera, Patrick holding Ian, and Dan directing this scene. Now, in fairness, if we zoom out, you'll see CS50's own Ramon Galvin, who was just running. Now, what Ian was holding with the camera was this device here, which performs something called image stabilization, which is the technology with which we were keeping that shot along the river so relatively steady, even though those guys were all running backwards. Now, you might know of this kind of technology from yesteryear. In fact, if you grew up with the so-called gyro ball, which looked a little something like this, this is a very simple device that essentially spins on three axes so that if you have some cereal inside of this ball, in theory, it should never fall out because the handles will always keep the bowl itself in an upright position. Now, I recently had an opportunity to spend time with CS50's own Dan Coffey, who went into more technical detail as to how more modern image stabilization works. So I'm here with CS50's own Dan Coffey, jogging along the Charles River on Harvard's campus. Now, if Dan were just using a camera to shoot this, the image would be pretty shaky, definitely not stable. But he's using a technique called image stabilization, which should, hopefully, be stabilizing the image. Can we shoot the rest of this inside? Okay, image stabilization. What is it? How does it work?
So for many years, the TV and film industry have been trying to get more dynamic shots by introducing movement, but it's a challenge to keep them stabilized, right? You've seen the West Wing, maybe, where they do the walk and talk shot. Mm-hmm. And basically what they use for that is a Steadicam, which is a big rig that you wear. It's a vest with an arm that isolates the camera from the user and counterbalances it with a series of weights. But it takes a really long time to set up, and it's very complicated to actually use.
Okay.
There are new developments in software that you can use where you can make adjustments in the Mac or PC, which sometimes work, sometimes they don't. But one of the latest developments is actually this. This is the Movi M10. Mm-hmm. It's a really neat piece of equipment from our friends at FreeFly Systems. And basically it uses a series of gimbal axes to stabilize your camera.
It's a gimbal.
So a gimbal is a set of rings that each spins on its own axis and basically isolates each direction, either the X, the Y, or the Z.
Okay.
And really just makes it very smooth and fluid.
Okay.
So this M10 is a large gimbal and has three axes on it. One here for the tilt. It's got one in the back for the roll and one up top for the pan. Okay. And I can actually show you if you want to see how these actually work. So if you look here in the software, this is the FreeFly configurator, and it's basically outputting diagnostic information right now.
Okay.
But you see we have motor tilt, motor roll, and motor pan.
Mm-hmm.
And as I actually pan the camera, you're going to see the blue line start to go up and down.
Okay, so that represents the...
It's the resistance of the motor pushing back against me because the M10 always wants to come back to rest in the same position.
Okay, so the taller or the lower the bar, the more resistance.
Yeah, the more intensity that it's, the motor is using to fight me. If I tilt, you can see the red
down
line do the same thing. And then roll. So these are the three axes we're stabilizing against, right?
Okay.
And so this is not normally how you would operate it, right? So if I actually pick this up, and here, why don't you actually hang on to it?
Yeah, sure. Thank you.
And now you can see how little the camera moves when you hit the edge, right, the window, if you will. It starts to pan with you. That's actually set in the software as well.
I see.
But there's another really neat feature. If you are in a more complicated shoot, you can turn on this remote, have a second camera operator actually do the nitty-gritty control. So I can now pan, this control, I can tilt, and I can actually roll. And so in this setup, you would actually be the one moving the camera physically, and I would connect a wireless video transmitter to the camera, put a receiver here on a monitor, and then I could actually, just like a video game, kind of operate the camera for you.
Nice.
So I'll put it back in single operator mode, but you can get a sense of how smooth it actually is.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I have an idea. You want to follow me?
Sure.
Okay. So we're here in the bathroom to test out some actual image stabilization in front of, well, the only mirror we have. And I thought it'd be interesting to see just how much the camera moves when I actually move my arms up, down, left, and right. So,
let's see the pan, tilt, roll.
Here we go. I'm really moving it.
Yeah, so I see a little bit of movement, but I mean, you would never operate it like that either.
No, definitely not.
All right, so David, let's get serious this time. We'll do a test where you actually go up the stairs and I will lead you with the stabilized Movi and Andrew will actually come next to me. Come on over, Andrew, and we'll see what it looks like side by side.
Got it.
Okay, here we go. Ready to go up the stairs in 3, 2, 1, go. Hi, Shelly. All right, David, why don't you take this? Take all that you've learned today and put it together and we'll get the final shot. All right, and here we go.
And now, 60 seconds of gimbals.
Uh-oh, look out. Let's face it, kids spill stuff. But now parents can relax whenever kids snack. Introducing the Gyro Bowl, the world's first ever snack bowl that spins and spins and stuff stays in. The Gyro Bowl is 100% totally, absolutely kid-proof. Just fill the Gyro Bowl and you're ready to go.
The magic is in the middle. The Gyro Bowl works just like a globe.
Gyro Bowl's inner bowl rotates 360 degrees and magically stays open side up no matter what. So the Gyro Bowl keeps all your snacks inside however you bounce, swing, or fly. Now kids can use the amazing Gyro Bowl as a super snack contraption. Fill it up with raisins or cereal and rev up the action.
Kids love the amazing Gyro Bowl because it's fun and it never spills.
Pack crackers and grapes and get on with the chase. And when mom drives to the store, Gyro Bowl keeps the snacks off the floor.
Now you may recall I recently spent time with CS50's own Colton Ogden and this guy here, the Now robot that was loaned to us by CS50's friend, Professor Radhika Nagpal in the robotics group. Now, of course, robots don't all take this form. In fact, we recently saw this guy here playing soccer with President Barack Obama. But it turns out that even soccer playing robots can come in different forms. In fact, pictured here are two custom-made robots by Professor Radhika Nagpal's research group, with whom we sat down recently to better understand and how they and you can build your own soccer-playing robots and pit them in competition against each other in an international RoboCup competition.
My name is Radhika Nagpal. I'm a professor at Harvard University, and I do bio-inspired robotics. I'm really interested in how groups can work together really well.
So my name is Eric Schlunz. I'm studying electrical engineering at Harvard University.
I'm Kate Donahue. I'm a sophomore at Harvard College and concentrating in math and physics. So I'm part of RFC Cambridge. It's a joint Harvard-MIT team. We basically build robots that play soccer.
So the challenge of the RoboCup competition, and it's an international competition that was started by people in the US and Japan actually, is to create a team of robots that can play and possibly win against the world champions of the World Cup.
There are teams from all around the world, and because we're so far spread out, it's really hard for us to get to test our robots against each other. So it's just sort of like a soccer match. There'll be some round-robin games and then a final competition. And it's a chance to see how our robots stack up against others and just exchange ideas.
If you think about little kids playing soccer and older people playing soccer and think about the difference, like all the things that a little kid cannot do that an older person can, computer science has to fill that whole gap.
So you could say, you know, I want the robot to go behind the ball to set up for a shot. But what you really have to tell the computer to do is, you know, find the vector between the ball and the goal and go there minus an offset. And you really need the computer science to be able to express yourself in a way that the robots can understand.
We all work on very different parts of the robot, but we really need to coordinate. It's a big challenge and it's great when we all like work on something together. So we'll build the mechanical part of it, and then the electrical engineers will make the circuit boards, and the computer science people will have done their simulations and then try and figure out how they can combine that and make the robot actually move.
I think really robotics is often about iteration. You do take one step forward, you take two steps back, you try to make one thing better, it makes something else worse.
On the computer science team, we've made a lot of progress on our artificial intelligence. We threw out all the old strategy code and have been making something that's much more adaptive to how the other team is playing. So on defense, we do things like ranking the most dangerous players and covering them in a man-to-man defense based on that. And then on offense, we generate these maps over the entire field of how good the spot is, and then assign our robots to these dynamically.
They need to be able to see, they need to be able to understand the world, they need to be able to move fast and turn and manipulate, they need to be able to notice their teammates and understand what they're doing. They need to have a strategy, and they need to adapt their strategy because their opponent will be doing things all the time, and so you can't have a predetermined plan, you have to be able to adapt.
Since last year's competition, we've done a lot of advances, especially in the wheel design. We've shifted the motors down and made everything much more compact, which has allowed us to move our center of gravity down, which allows us to go faster, and also put in a dribbler, which is something we've wanted for a long time, but just haven't been able to make fit until now.
So each of the circuit boards on the robot has a different purpose. The four big ones, there and there and there, each control one of the motors. So that basically takes a signal from the computer, decides how fast the wheel should spin, and sends the correct voltage to the wheels to do that. So like this board here controls this motor, and this one here controls this motor. We also have these two boards in the middle. This one right here controls charging these big capacitors for the kicker. This board here controls when the robot kicks by using this light sensor right here to see when the ball is in front of it. It also controls the dribbler here, which we use to put backspin on the ball so we can move backwards with it.
It's not just you're trying to win, it's that you're trying to advance knowledge. And so you work on whatever you work on, and then you have to release a paper saying exactly what you did that's so cool and how other people can do that and that they can build on your work. And so if there's something so advanced someone comes up with, everybody can sort of draw on that. You can have that for 1 year, and maybe nobody else can use it that year, but then the next year everybody else will have modified it and done the same thing. And so it's really just moving forwards and not staying in the same place.
I definitely want to be working on robotics in my career. I think that there's just a lot of amazing things that can be done to automate things, to make cars safer, to make just really everything work automatically so that people don't have to do things that are dangerous or dull. There's just so many things that robots can do better than people, and I think that as a society we need to start doing those to free people up to do more interesting things.
This is indeed our season finale and our 10th of 10 episodes, and it's truly remarkable how in just 10 episodes, how many mistakes we have made. In fact, CS50's own Shelley Westover, whom you may recall from such films as, recently went through hours of footage of both live episodes and rehearsals thereof to find some of our favorite memories to share them with you. Hello, world. This is CS50 Live. So if you see me trip, if you see me misspeak, if you see me screw up, all of that is happening literally right now in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Oh, hi, world. Drum roll. Per second. Pause the video if you would like. Book redder. Hey, but whoops, is Mark Zuckerberg's favorite patent to protect our nuclear missiles. Keeping an eye, as usual, Google itself goggles. Good episode for you. It's actually quite fine. It ends. And whom you may recall, head to this, you are here.
This is CS Fickfit.
And now I made the blooper reel. Fantastic.
Should we redo the ending? How should we do the ending?
Photos of Jason Hirschhorn dressed as a pumpkin.
Oh boy. I don't know if I want people to
no,
see that.
Now it's photos of Jason Hirschhorn dressed as a boy.
And if you're interested, I can actually show you how I was able to get him to do
all these things. Yeah, absolutely.
He's a little off balance this morning. He hasn't had his coffee yet.
Oh! Oh God.
Oh God. From
where's he from?
Right about right where my arm is, you can see like the white character. There's the pole. Like,
they don't know that it's the you just point here.
Oh.
Can you hear me, world?
Hello, world. Welcome to CS50 Live. I'm Ramon Galvan.
And I'm David Malin.
And today I'm hosting today's episode.
What with
you? Okay. Okay.
Don't say shit on the air.
Oh, he'll be the Robin to my Batman, the Andy Richter to my Conan, the Cheech to my Chong today. This is most definitely a serious thing that we're doing today. This is not a joke. Dropbox has made quite a fuss lately, but I know nothing about this. What is this about? That was all above me. And this is something I don't know of. We also took a tour of Third Glass.
Right there. It allows you to swipe credit cards unlike your iPhone. in order to process payments.
I have a flip phone. Let's play the clip.
All right. To
host the first ever.
What?
To host the first ever.
Okay. To host the first ever.
I was in graduate school at the time.
And I was in fourth grade. Although I love Samyla, I would much rather not spend
half as much time with her.
Exactly.
Come on out, Samyla.
This was CS50, and this was terrifying.
This is terrifying. Made a nice little sizzle reel to kind of encapsulate the debauchery that took place.
I love you.
Aw. I love you. Unlike David, who circles you.
Where am I slide? Oh. That's it for CS50 Live. Thanks so much to this week's contributors, to everyone behind the camera, and thank you to you for tuning in this whole season. This was CS50.
Closing time. Open all the doors and let you out into the world. Closing time. Turn all of the lights on over every boy and every